Good morning, folks. Hope you're having a great Wednesday morning. We've got a wonderful show set up for you today. We'll talk to New Orleans & Company President and CEO Walt Leger about the upcoming fall events. And these are really important. And we'll, in just a few minutes during my monologue, I'll talk about this and some other issues and connect these dots for you. At 11 o'clock, we are going to visit with Michael Heck. We'll talk about a number of things from resilience to resistance, number of other opportunities that are falling in at a really good time and for a lot of different reasons, and we'll talk about that. And we'll also talk with Paul Webster in the back half of the hour. He's a senior fellow at the Cicero Institute, and they recently released an analysis of programs that address homelessness in a few of the U.S. markets, and it's entitled Common Deficiencies in Homeless Program Oversight Across 5 U.S. Jurisdictions, and they are Arizona, California, Los Angeles, New Orleans, and Washington State. And they'll talk about these deficiencies and maybe why they're not as effective as they otherwise thought that they should be. So that'll be some very interesting conversation. Last week, and I had Joe Geruso on the show. Tommy Tucker had him on this morning talking about the budget. And I'm glad Tommy did so, because this issue for the upcoming mayor's race is critically important. And I can't overstate the importance of setting priorities and making sure that these priorities are, in fact, funded. And when we look at, and what was mentioned today, which was not mentioned during the course of my interview, and maybe they were able to evaluate some additional information, is the impact of the Super Bowl. There are a lot of projections that are thrown around relative to Super Bowls. And what's interesting here is one would think that we would have a vested interest in really focusing in, with a laser focus, on how these numbers generate and what dollars and where and why. Because it's really important relative to future negotiations with Super Bowls as to gaining a better understanding of that, other than just to say X. Now, separate and apart from that, there's so much positive press and everything else that you can't even put a number on it. Let's call that out for what it is. But it really is important about city services and what city services are going to be funded or otherwise, and whether or not, you know, this is a breakout event as it relates to sales taxes and otherwise. It's worth knowing. It's important, right? Especially if you're attempting to budget dollars, budget expenses, that you are at least able to cover. I mean, this is what fiduciaries do on behalf of taxpayers. They make sure that they're dotting I's and crossing T's and making sure that when they engage in negotiations in the future, that they do so from a learned place, an educated place, as to what their experiences are in the past. And it's very disappointing that we do not spend more time trying to figure out exactly what the fiscal impact is. This is what everybody in business does. All forward-leaning businesses evaluate these types of events in this way, right? Because it really helps with the following year in setting up a budget. So you have a number that you can extract from projected revenue because you know you're not going to have that event. But we are not exactly sure. And we're not exactly sure the breadth and depth of the bump. There is a bump. I would assume there's a bump. If there's not a bump, something's fundamentally wrong. But the fact of the matter is that here we are, how many months post, and we still don't know? I mean, you know, sales taxes and sales tax reports are done and forwarded by the 10th. The payments are due by the 10th of the following month, and the report should go out shortly thereafterwards, right? You account for the dollars that are coming in. You look year over year. You look at your previous year. You look at the calendar to see what events were actually in town during the same period of time so that you can remove the anomalies. You figure out what the baseline is, and you then extract or extrapolate what the bump actually is because of the Super Bowl. It's not rocket science. It's a mathematical equation. You usually set up your collection systems to account for same. You set up different codes that you're looking at, right? So you know the exact days. You try to figure out what days you're going to get that impact of people coming in. Maybe they shortened up the number of days that people came in. I don't know. It depends on the national economy, what's going on. The NFL historically has been somewhat immune to that. Maybe things are changing. We don't know. You go back, you can figure out and talk to your peers in Las Vegas and other recent towns to see what their bump was. What did they experience? They're more than happy to share it with you. A lot of this information, they can't get down to the granular level because it's proprietary sales tax information, but it's okay. You figure out zones, you know, entertainment districts. You can report these numbers out in whole and in their totality and figure out where this is. Same thing holds true with Taylor Swift. Now, in the case of Taylor Swift, for whatever reason, it seems as though they were able to figure that out in very short order. I'm not sure why. It's not too terribly different than what happened with the Super Bowl. I mean, the nature of the additional events are a little bit different, but that's okay, too. The numbers are the number. And they should be able to report this number out because it's important. It's important for those that are going to be incoming in the council as the legislative branch. It's certainly important to the incoming mayor as it relates to collection efforts of sales taxes with all of these respective events. The number of businesses that you have, occupational licenses that are issued, occupational license tax that's collected, all of these things are very, very important. So that you have a better feeling as to where you stand at any particular month, right, as it relates to your budget. Now, a lot of people were texting in, and I was watching it, you know, and same with my show, not quite understanding. So the city of New Orleans is an anomaly. It's different than any other city. They collect their property taxes on the front end. So at the close of December 31st, when those bills are due for payment, they're allegedly going out at some point in time in October, November. This is all spelled out in state laws to when you have to do certain activities, like the assessment rolls have been open in the month of August for you to appeal if you think your assessment on your home is incorrect. The rolls have to be formulated and sent forward to the tax collector by a certain date. The bills should be printed and sent out by a certain period of time. And then, of course, you have to make payment by December 31st. But in New Orleans, you pay on the front end. Your payment on December 31st in Jefferson Parish is for 2025. Your payment on December 31st that's due for property taxes that's paid is actually for 2026. You pay in front of the year. Before you've received service one, you're paying on the front end for all of your services. So you know a good portion of the revenue side of the equation of what that number is. You know the best number is going to be the totality of all of the pieces of property on the tax rolls. You know what that number is. And then sales tax are done on a month-by-month basis. And then there's fines and fees. that are done on a monthly basis. And there are other revenue sources that are out there. But the bulk of your revenue is going to come through three buckets: property taxes, sales taxes, fines and fees. That's your water bill, which is a fee, your garbage bill, which is a fee. Some of this is paid in ad valorem taxes. Some of it comes out on your water bill, depending on usage and things of that nature. Your sewerage is based on water consumption at a certain rate. And these are all things that you pretty much know. And there's not a significant deviation month over month, year over year, as it relates to any of this, because you just don't have a lot of properties coming on, nor do you have a lot of properties coming off. So you should have a pretty good idea as to where you stand, right, from a budget perspective. And Joe said it during my interview. He said it again during that interview that was conducted by Tommy Tucker, that they don't get answers from the finance department in a timely fashion about where they stand in that particular month and the projected surplus or deficit that they will have. But what's interesting, at the six-month mark, you should pretty much have a good idea of your attrition rate. So if you're budgeted for 100 employees in this particular department, but you've only had 75 for the first 6 months, you can book, you know, that surplus that you have there. You can figure out that number and know that going into the final 6 months that you're ahead of the game from employee cost. It's what we all do. It's what we all always did when we're looking at the budget, to try and figure out where we are, to see if there are anomalies that are appearing that we're not aware of, that we need to make some tweaks in the back half of the year so that we don't find ourselves upside down. We've already booked the property tax revenue. We're just figuring out all the other things and expenses. So it's interesting, you know, as to what is actually happening. And I don't understand why this is the case. This is not new. It's not rocket science. It's just a function of pulling all of these silos of information together, evaluating them, and providing them to the legislative branch. We will never get ahead of this problem if we don't know during a particular budget year that there's in fact a problem, right? And it's incredibly frustrating to keep hearing this over and over and over again. And those other folks that, you know, are much more proactive, and whether it's government finance or public finance, you know, when I speak with those folks, they're so mystified as to why these things can't be pulled together. So we have got to demand that these reports get done. In fact, this sales tax report is one that should be provided to the council and one that should be provided to the public every month. It shouldn't be a secret. Maybe they do. I've never seen them. But, I mean, it's something that ought to be provided. It's something, obviously, that should be talked about at the council meeting every month. Where do we stand on sales tax numbers? Why is there a dip? Why is there an increase? What do you attribute this to? Where are we? What's our expectations for the following months? It's really important, and that's where I want to connect these dots to what Walt's going to be talking about. Right? All of these upcoming fall events. Because for the city, not unlike in Jefferson Parish and others, you make the vast majority, the city more than anyone, makes the vast majority of their best sales tax months, are the fall, the winter, and early spring. Those should be the best sales tax months out there, right? We know we have a whole lot of different activities going on. The convention season, we're going to talk about all the upcoming events in the fall. We know that we have, you know, the end of the football season, possibility of playoff. We have bowl games, Sugar Bowl, the Ardell Carrier Bowl. We've got all New Orleans Bowl. We've got all kinds of things happening that are pulling people to the city in the beginning of next year. Obviously, you know all of this. We go into Mardi Gras, big spend, a lot of people coming to the city. Same thing, a lot of conventions coming to the city. Everything else. This is where you make it, right? This is where this group, New Orleans and Company, has been hugely successful in creating a landscape where more people are visiting now than ever. New wallets come into our town paying sales taxes, and they don't live here. It's the best kind of spend there is, quite frankly. They consume very little resources, services, and they leave a lot of money. You couldn't ask for a better spender. And that's why, whether it's local travel, people coming from Baton Rouge, Lafayette, Mississippi, Alabama, Texas, driving into the city, best kind of visit there is. Coming, leaving money here, paying the sales taxes. That's why it's important, and it's why I set up giving them time every month to talk about this, because it helps drive this economy. Same thing with the port and all of these things. But we have to be able to take and utilize this information and the successes that we have and communicate that to the taxpaying public, because we need more cheerleaders cheerleading for the success of this city day in and day out, and understanding the internal dynamics of what makes this place zing financially. Because human nature is when you're not on top of it, you're not releasing the information, people are suspicious. Wonder if that Super Bowl's worth it. I don't know. Is it? Maybe. Who? What? Yeah. People start to doubt. You don't want doubters. We want advocates, right? We want people out there spreading the word. We need to compete on so many different fronts. And the more information that we can provide the taxpaying public, the better off we are about the successes of all of this stuff. Whether it's decadence, Super Bowl, Mardi Gras, 4th of July, it doesn't matter. We need to be on top of it, giving this information out. Talking about the incredible time that people had. The banner numbers that we posted financially. Worth the spend in overtime for the NOPD. Worth the spend of the NOFD, EMS, all of the other services that are provided to the visiting public, it is worth it. Information is power. If we give it out to the taxpaying public, they will become advocates for this place that we call home, for our local economy. And we see this kind of permeating over other issues. We've got an issue relative to the port that may be one of the single most transformational developments that we've had an opportunity in the greater New Orleans area in my lifetime. And we have folks that are saying that there's no economic benefit to them. And no matter how much data that you provide for them right now in this vacuum as it relates to this one project, there are those that, good number of people that don't want to believe it. You know why? I go back to, they're not used to receiving this information. If it became second nature where they received this information, they saw it in living color after all of these events, after all of these projects that we involve ourselves in. The rehabilitation of neighborhoods, the re-engineering of public housing, all of these projects that are out there, many of which are very, very expensive to engage in. But when you talk about improving the fabric of the community and taking a realistic economic look at it and putting that information out there real time, the public gets used to that. They become very learned about the downstream implications economically of these projects. They do. We all do. And I think one of the byproducts of that is we all end up as cheerleaders because we have a better and more intelligent understanding of what's there and what this is all about. We're not as cynical. We're not as skeptical as it relates to these issues. Unless and until you get a mayor like the mayor we've had for 8 years that doesn't want to tell anybody anything, that wants to do her own thing and walk to the beat of her own drum. So we got a lot of catching up to do. Because this is what we've had for 8 years. And the level of skepticism and cynicism is creating a real problem. Even a problem of what we're seeing as it relates to people running for public office. And we'll talk about this attack on Royce Duplessis when we come back after the break. Stay with us. You know, it's interesting. There was an happenstance that happened over the weekend. And we wonder why people don't put themselves up for public service. Because when you do, you make yourself available to individuals like this alleged influencer, Byron Cole, who sat behind Royce Duplessis and his wife, Crystal Duplessis, during a service at the historic Second Baptist Church on Ferret Street. And I looked at the video, and obviously he was trying to get under Mr. Duplessis' skin, saying, and I'm not going to even repeat what he said because that just perpetuates what he thinks is of consequence. And, you know, it's just the whole time that I'm sitting there watching this thing, I'm saying to myself, this is the classic example of why public service is not nearly as attractive as it used to be, because you have individuals that believe that because they have a following on social media, that they are the center of some universe. And they have totally forgotten how to engage with public respect or otherwise, or read the room, understand where they are. They feel like whatever video they put out is going to be more important in everyone's lives than anything else that they're going to view on that particular day. And it's uncalled for. It is absolutely ridiculous. It belittles this process that we're involved in, trying to elect our future leader of the city of New Orleans that's so very important to us at this point in time. I don't think anybody's going to debate that, right? This Mr. Duplessis, I would assume, was invited to attend the church by the pastor there. They do that. Give the candidates opportunities to speak to their congregation of value, for sure, an opportunity to introduce oneself to voters. And you have these detractors. I don't know what Mr. Cole's ultimate goal is here. Maybe he just enjoys being a disruptor because he believes he's the center of the universe and because he's got some people that follow him, probably because of a lot of these antics that they just think is funny and that he's going to get up in people's face and think that there's really value for that. And, you know, it was done in a church and he's sitting right behind Mr. Duplessis and Mr. Duplessis is there with his wife. Crystal, I mean, no respect at all for the venue, the church, right? No respect at all for the Mr. Duplessis and his wife who are putting themselves up. And, you know, this is a sacrifice. Anytime you want to run for public office, it's a sacrifice. You want to ask tough questions? Well, go to a debate or a forum where that you have the opportunity to ask tough questions. But it's not this venue. And you don't sit behind the candidate in church and start making some silly-ass comments, you know, in an attempt to get under his skin. And you'll understand, because I will read one line of what he said, that it's classic. He's the center of the universe. So he tells Mr. Duplessis, as he's sitting behind him, in the pew behind him in church, "You bold, son. You bold enough to come sit in my church where I've been all my life." Well, what kind of ownership of this church, Mr. Cole, do you think that you have? Who are you? What do you have? Because you happen to choose a church to participate in whatever it is that you're participating in, your faith or otherwise, but you choose to disrespect the entire congregation, whether they're for Mr. Duplessis or not for Mr. Duplessis is of no moment. You're being totally disrespectful to the congregation, to the church, and to your faith in conducting yourself in this fashion. For the sake of what? A social media posting? Are you kidding me? Are you for real? You bold, son? You bold enough to come sit in my church where I've been all my life? What Lord is the center of your universe? That's what I'd like to know. What is it that you're trying to perpetuate? If you don't like Mr. Duplessis, that's fine. But this is not the appropriate way to express your dislike, disgust, or whatever it may be for Mr. Duplessis, and certainly not when his wife is sitting right there next to him. Right? But again, you're the center of the universe. You're all things to all people. You're everything, man. Because you're on social media. This is the classic example of someone that believes in their own press, right? They're bigger than everybody else. They're bigger than their church. They're bigger than their faith. They are, in fact, the center of the universe. And we wonder why we are faced with not a lot of people that want to get into public service. Because they have to deal with this type of idiocracy, where it's just completely and totally inappropriate. And if you believe for some reason that it's inappropriate for politicians to visit churches, take it up with your pastor. Take it up with your pastor, not Mr. Duplessis. And not his wife. Thankfully, one of the other candidates called this individual out right away. Council Vice President Helena Moreno criticized Cole's behavior. "I thought it was incredibly disrespectful," she said, "to come at anyone at church, no matter who they are. That's just uncalled for." Absolutely. And Ms. Duplessis, of course, handled it in a charming way. "Despite the lies and the insults that were hurled against us, my heart broke for that congregation. They were there to worship God, yes. To uplift one another, yes. To be uplifted, yes. And that was taken away from them today by someone who believes is the center of all things." If this individual shows up somewhere else and engages in this type of conduct, I certainly hope whoever the organizers are or whatever, you know, that they simply escort this individual out to let them know that we are not going to embrace, engage buffoonery. And let him go attack everybody that's organized all these events for escorting him out of the room. And then maybe others will read the room and gain a better understanding of what this election needs to be all about. We have enough sideshows and freak shows in life. We don't need more. We need less. We'll be right back. So I don't know about you, but it's kind of interesting when we talk about the utilization of federal assets. Maybe there may be some disagreement. Maybe the Posse Comitatus Act limits the utilization of the military in some respect, but it doesn't limit the utilization or use of federal law enforcement authorities. It certainly does not do so if done in a task force in a cooperative fashion. So I would ask you, as you're watching this and you're listening to what these talking heads are saying about assistance being offered by the Trump administration for additional federal resources, why would you turn it down? So what is the accepted? It's almost as though they have an accepted casualty rate, right? I mean, in Chicago, 7 dead, 52 wounded in shootings over the weekend, right? 3 mass shootings actually occurred on Saturday. A group of people were standing on South State Street when a vehicle drove by and someone inside the car opened fire. 7 people between the ages of 28 and 32 were wounded and taken to the hospital. A couple hours later, multiple shooters opened fire on a group on another street. All 4 victims between the age of 26 and 39, they were thankfully listed in good condition, but they were shot. The third mass shooting happened early Monday morning. 5 victims ranging in age from 17 to 33 were listed in good to critical condition at different hospitals. So 54 people shot, 7 dead. And the response from Pritzker, the governor there, is interesting. Look, he says, and I quote, look, big cities have crime. There's no doubt about it. But let's just pay attention to what Trump is doing. He's overlooking red states that have much higher crime rates. So he's deflecting right there, right? Because the only way that any of this works and what they're doing is in concentrated crime occurrence areas. That's where this type of strategy works best. Right away, J.B. Pritzker wants to look at a state as opposed to a city. Not to mention, some of the cities that he's addressing in some of the red states are very small cities. They don't have the economic impact that cities like New York, Chicago, L.A., San Francisco, Baltimore, and others have. They're not major tourist attractions. They don't lure international visitors. I mean, I could go on and on and on as it relates to the differences and why there might be a heightened level of importance to access federal resources, federal assets, to create a different aura about your city, right? So they will continue to deflect. In fact, the Chicago mayor doesn't even want to. He can't even answer a question about whether or not additional police, additional assets, additional anything, actually, would be of any consequence, because what he wants to avoid are additional arrests. He is fundamentally, basically opposed to arresting people. He doesn't like that. You can tell the disdain that he has for that conversation. He gets really tense, and he just does not want to talk about the incapacitation of the impact criminal that's running rampant across the streets of our cities doesn't want to talk about it at all. And let me just talk about this for 1 second. What happens in Chicago doesn't, and when it's negative, doesn't help us, especially with foreign visitors that come here. They go to multiple cities. They want multiple experiences. They stay for extended period of times. So it's incredibly important to our economy that Atlanta's safe, Houston's safe, Austin's safe, San Antonio's safe, Chicago's safe. Short hops flying from there to here. And the tide rises for all of us. So I wouldn't look at it in a vacuum. I wouldn't look at it in a silo. Of course, that's what they want, because they want to deflect from the issue. So define safe. That's what I'd like to know, is what is safe to you, Governor Pritzker? How many? How many have to die a month before we say that it's not a manufactured crisis? I don't know, 7 dead, 52 shot over the weekend. Sounds like a crisis to me. I don't think anybody has to worry about manufacturing one in Chicago, and they certainly hadn't had to worry about manufacturing one for decades, right? We'll be right back.